Right back at you. Game day for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I've got a new haircut.
You look great.
Fresh. It's 16 degrees outside. We could have golfed today.
Spring is in the air. I got purple on. Bring on Easter.
What is better than that going into tonight's contest between the Toronto Maple Leafs and Colorado Avalanche? I'm Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jake Schultz here for the next 2 hours, including this hour that is live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. Leaf Hour edition, jam-packed today, including a doctor segment. Dr. Jason Smith, our orthopedic guru, because there's lots of talk about Gabriel Landeskog making a comeback, but not just any comeback. We're talking about a comeback off a cartilage transplant surgery.
He's got a documentary out, this guy.
That's where my expertise just falls off.
Yeah, no, I don't know how to do hockey. Doctor's going to tell us what's going on.
Top of the hour, Jason York, co-host of Coming in Hot, Sens podcast, will join us as well. We'll talk about those Ottawa Senators, the Montreal Canadiens last night. Critical game that ended up in favor of the Montreal Canadiens, but we'll get his thoughts as well. And then Aaron Ward, Stanley Cup champion with Carolina Hurricanes. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but they've been really, really good since trading away the Rantanen headache,
hockey's weird.
According to them.
Well, they had won three in a row before they traded him, and then they traded him, and they've won four in a row. So they're just hot. They're just playing well.
That's the way she goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What version of the Toronto Maple Leafs do we expect tonight versus a very good team?
Before we get into that,
okay,
can I ask you something?
Yeah, anything.
Because you just mentioned the Habs and the Sens game last night, which I watched the third period. And, you know, I thought it was a fantastic crowd. Mm-hmm. And the Montreal crowd is out of this world. And, like, the goal pop when Nick Suzuki pulls that off of Allmark's pad and jams it home, they go absolutely mental. Tickets are cheap there. Is that why there's real fans in the lower bowl? Like, what? Like, why does it look like that?
That's a great question.
They're giving them away for free out front. Like,
probably not.
I don't understand why that looks so much better.
Corinne, our Sportsnet makeup artist, mm-hmm. saw her today. She tells me she went to the Canadiens versus the Florida Panther game.
Cool.
Good game.
Yeah, really good game. They won, of course. Yep. And she said they did the wave for 10 minutes.
I heard that.
The wave for 10 minutes. And my first thought is,
it's a little too long.
She was telling you as a positive, and I heard you be like, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, once or twice.
Yeah.
But if I see that thing coming and I got to stand up again, I've had enough.
Yeah.
10 minutes. And she said, it was fantastic.
But your point is
that she's younger than I am.
No, well, that for one. But it ain't happening at Scotiabank Arena.
But I thought on Monday night,
do the wave? I don't know.
The St. Pat's game.
Yeah.
I thought the crowd was excellent. And I think probably because it was St. Patrick's Day, like a little half an hour later start, potentially a little more grease involved. People were fired up.
Grease is the key.
There was a wave that happened at the Leafs game.
Okay, all right.
But I just, you know, I watched that crowd.
Is it different?
Why does it look like that?
Is it different? Do we know it's different?
What?
The Montreal, the Leafs? Like, is it?
Oh, my God. You watched the third period. That crowd, it was like a final game, the way they were popping.
I would say the bigger question is, like, does it seem like there's more jerseys in the lower bowl there?
Yes.
Because it's also businesses presumably buying tickets there.
Maybe they're just more passionate people in Montreal.
Maybe they're just less jaded. they've only recently sucked.
Okay.
For the largest stretch of their history.
Mm-hmm.
And Leaf fans have done it since 67.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Listen, that's
fair. It's almost as if the Leaf fans are, like, they're willing to go out there and cheer and look like normal fans, but they kind of come across like they're waiting for something bad to happen.
Well, sure. They are.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair,
just a guillotine above their necks.
You can't really compare Leaf fans to any other fans.
I guess you're right.
Because they've been stung the worst in the league.
All right.
But I do, last thing on this. I do think, though.
You brought this up.
I know. I do think, you know, that if you had a number of very passionate fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you had like a lot of the true fans of the Lower Bowl, it would look a lot like that.
Of course.
So just saying that maybe
the fans exist.
So the corporate people in Montreal are way bigger fans maybe of the Habs than the corporate fans in Toronto. Anyways, move on. Just quick thought.
Okay. Overall thoughts going in tonight, coming off a game against a team that didn't fare very well and, by the way, didn't even look remotely the same 24 hours later last night at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, I don't know. The thought tonight is, here's what's interesting. Joseph Woll is going to get the start. That, to me, is a noteworthy development. I think it's noteworthy that David Kampf doesn't seem to be drawing back in for three straight healthy scratches, which, you know, he makes 2.2 or whatever he makes as a centerman. It's kind of a lot of games for a healthy Kampf to not play. That's all I got. Woll in particular is noteworthy.
Yesterday in our national hour, if you didn't have a chance to listen, Stephen Valiquette was as good as he has ever been on our show, and he right away did the Joseph Woll Stolarz, and he did not hesitate. It was Joseph Woll should be the guy.
Mm-hmm. He said that by bad start percentage, Joseph Woll has way fewer. He has, 18% of his starts were bad starts, and I think he said Stolarz was like 27. He said, so maybe Stolarz's best game is better, but he's saying that you're more likely to get a reliable goaltending performance out of Woll.
You think this tips the hand of now they're shaping Woll into a chance to run with this thing, or is it just simply you'd rather have Stolarz at the Garden tomorrow night against the New York Rangers because the last time he went in there, it was a 3-2 win, and he was lights out.
Yeah. They're both going to play back-to-back, so it's very possible that they just said, who suits which game more?
I think coming off Stolarz's not great night in Colorado last week, I think that has to kind of play into not giving him another chance at Colorado, protecting him, and feeling good about Joseph Woll right now, and then putting Stolarz in a position to succeed again in New York tomorrow night.
Would you like to hear Berube's justification for starting? Clip 5, please, Derek.
Clip 5. Oh, we're coming up in 5, 4, 3.
Talk amongst yourselves.
All right, here's my thoughts on Joseph Woll's season. It has gone exactly as you would want it to go for him. Who, you know, he was injured in the early part of the season. But, you know, one of the questions we had about him is, can he handle a starter's workload? Real heavy game. And when Stolarz got hurt, it forced him into a spot where he played a lot of hockey in a row, right? Didn't get a ton of relief. He got through that unhurt and playing well. Now Stolarz is back. He's kind of splitting the starts again. He's been really put in a position now to succeed here. And I feel pretty good about where his game is at. Keep in mind, going into this year, you would have wanted him to be the guy as the younger guy with the longer contract, right?
We now have clip 5. Can you play clip 5, please, Eric?
Stolarz tonight?
No, Woll.
Special reason why he got this one, Woll, of the back-to-back?
I liked his last two games, so going to go with him again tonight.
It's never an algorithm doing that. He's just like, I just liked it.
I mean, he went
well, pretty simple.
He went with Stolarz, 2 starts in a row, 2 of the bigger games of the year with against Florida when he lost, not his fault, lost the game. Against Ottawa Saturday night, they lost the game. Goes to Woll against Calgary in a huge game. They get the win. I think you go back to a guy and you kind of see if he can put a couple wins in a row together, because we're now, I think I saw David Amber send a tweet today. We were exactly 1 month away from the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah.
I think you got to figure out if a guy can play a couple in a row and win a few games in a row here. So I think the competition's on.
Not to kind of derail this into a bigger look here, but I'm going to do it anyways. Like, if you really, truly look at the schedule moving forward, it just puts a cherry on top that this was a cruddy schedule for the Toronto Maple Leafs all season long. I'm like, okay, so they got Colorado tonight at home.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got a back-to-back in New York. Nashville. Then they come back Tuesday, and then they got to go out west.
Yeah.
And it's like, that sucks.
They actually have four back-to-backs to end the season here.
Whatever,
brutal.
Whatever this team felt like coming off of a fairly normal kind of feeling of being at home this last week, because we did the game in Utah, and then at least they got home Thursday, Saturday, Monday, home, fit a practice in there somewhere, kind of rest a little bit.
They
got to go back out there and go all hairy again.
It's actually brutal because it's a back-to-back, and then the second game being in New York, I'm sure they'll fly right to Nashville, right? They're not going to come home and then fly out to Nashville the next day.
Exactly.
So then you're in Nashville, you come home, they go to the West Coast. Yeah, one game
against
Philly.
Go
to the West Coast and you get San Jose, then a back-to-back LA Anaheim. You come home, you get a couple of games at home over a week stretch maybe, and then you go to Florida and you get a back-to-back there. You come home and you do a Montreal-Carolina back-to-back. That's a tough road in. And then they finished the year with Buffalo and Detroit, at Buffalo versus Detroit.
Do you see now, looking at this schedule, that a Stolarz or a Wohl can go like a week or 10 days and get into this groove?
You know, there's 15 games left. You're already splitting the back-to-backs. So there's 4-4, and now we're down to 7 games out of the 15 left. So it's probably going to be 4-3. These guys are probably going to split at 8-6.
Yeah, that's the way I see it.
Yeah.
And I was just looking at that schedule going, where do you fit it in? Where do you fit in? Oh, now I'm going to let one guy get hot. It's just, it's not set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's not not ideal for that, is it?
Okay.
That is a crazy schedule.
Yeah.
As far as the team following up a feel-good Monday night against Calgary, how important is the look tonight for you?
Very important. You know, the bigger picture is that over this run of play, they played some test games. You've said this year, how many games do you think are measuring stick games? 20? 15?
Less than 20.
Yeah. And they played Florida, Vegas, Colorado, and they got smoked. So, yeah, I would certainly say that how they look tonight does matter.
Florida game was close. Smoked is, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
Potentially aggressive. But they got beat. And Kipper didn't think it was as close as we did. But
I think in all those games, they just spend way too much time in their own zone. That's all. Mm-hmm. And then sustained forecheck. Can we have a game where they get 35 shots on goal? Is that possible?
I know.
No? Always be around like 4 or 5 a period, 7 a period? Can they have a game where they just get pucks to the net with some sustaining time?
So I did this like AWS Ice Tilt thing. I think I mentioned it the other day, but just about how much they control the play. They're like 24th in the NHL in terms of this ice tilt stat, which is just how much you guys are taking it to the opposition. They are very often getting it taken to them.
Do you have that list or no?
I can pull it up in one sec.
I want to hear the top teams.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You'll recognize them.
Yes.
The other piece of that is that they are 5th in the NHL in forecheck chances. So they are a dump and chase team. Yeah. And they get chances off the forecheck. Is that enough?
So that sounds like one and done.
Yes. Sure. If that's one way to take it, they do create it off the forecheck, but then they don't maintain possession.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing. No second, third opportunities. No waves.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. As of, that's last
but
year.
You would think that the way they've tried to play in years past under Sheldon Keefe was more of the wave way, right? Where they tried to hold
the puck. They were 7th last year.
Where they'd want to have the puck a lot more. They want the regroups. They want to hold on to it. They want to, cycle it more, as opposed to getting it on the end glass, hammering a guy through it, and putting it to the front of the
net.
Four of the top 5 teams are Carolina, Florida, Colorado, and Edmonton.
Mm.
Somehow Nashville's in there. But I think it's because they're losing all the time, and they're constantly like score effects.
Yeah.
I think sometimes they look like there's a lot of pressure no matter where they are. No matter how much duress they're under or how much time that they have, that Craig Berube's telling them pucks to the net, pucks to the net. Mm-hmm. And there's times, yes, that is important. You need to recognize when it's better than a turnover, but there's also times when it could be really bad play. Mm-hmm. Either a goalie absorbs it for a face-off, or you actually turn the puck over.
Yeah. Well, Washington is not very high up in this, and they tend to be a look for a shot quality team. They get the highest, like, quality chance. Yeah,
that's what Valley was saying yesterday, that they don't warm the goalies up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That was part of the Washington conversation we had with him yesterday.
Right. And that checks out with their numbers, too. So.
Okay.
Did you want to play the clip, first clip from Berube on following up from Monday's win? I thought it was a good clip from Berube. So, right. Clip one.
Let's do it.
If you look at the first period and just the predictability and the directness of, going south, going north, putting pucks at the net, recovering them, and, not hesitating, moving it quick, shooting it again, recovering, we were on our toes. And, we won a lot of loose puck recoveries, a lot of shot attempts. We didn't, we went back with the puck, we moved it up. Got it going north, and we got to do the same thing tonight.
Can I ask you two a question?
Hmm.
Is predictable is good?
Yes, in his mind.
Why is predictable?
He's not talking about the opposition predicting. He's talking about the players on his team, the teammates having a predictability amongst each other.
I got to say, and I've changed my stance on this, I do think it is good. Like, I think it's important that everyone's on the same page and you can trust what your teammate is going to do and where they're going to be. A lot of hockey I've come to learn and coaching is like, you just have to throw your fastball down the gut sometimes and see if they can hit it.
And
just throw it.
Even if they
know it's coming.
When people say and speak of identity, it's based off the predictability of what you are. So you can't have an identity if you cannot be somewhat predictable on how you look or play a hockey club. So I think that's exactly what he wants, is a predictability to be a hard team that forechecks, a hard team to get pucks to the net and then have your second and third opportunities. Mm-hmm. Don't hesitate.
One thing you hear people say around the NHL is that there are no secrets in the NHL anymore. Everyone has video. Everyone has stats. 32 teams play two systems between the 32 teams, essentially. Either a 1-2-2 or a 1-3-1, basically. They forecheck one of two ways, and you know what your opposition does. It's not possible on a hockey bench to say, this line's going to play a this, and you're going to play a that. So you kind of have to be like, they know what we're trying to do. Let's see if they can stop it. And that's something the Leafs, I guess, want to have more of.
Because when you hear that, immediately you think like, I would like to
catch them off guard here and there.
A little bit unpredictable at times would be okay.
But you're counting on the guys who are elite offensive players to do unpredictable things with it. Once you create those touches.
Well said.
Somewhere out there, there's an argument that if you're talking about three or four or five of the best players in the universe, Colorado has two of them. Let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on MacKinnon and Cale Makar.
Key to slowing down MacKinnon.
Well, I don't know, but if you find out before the game, you can let me know. you just got to try to stay on top of them the best you can. It's just like playing McDavid, right? They've got great speed and they're competitive guys with tons of skill. It's about trying to slow them down, picking them up in the neutral zone, trying to get on top of them, deny them the puck as much as possible, take time and space. It's all the same things that every coach says.
We'll follow up on that. How do you do it with Makar? He's coming from the back end.
Probably even more difficult. He's obviously a great player. And again, it's a lot of the same things, just trying to, get above him as much as you can and trying to make him work in his own zone. I think, tonight we got to make this team play in our own end as much as possible. And then it's important when that's happening that we can get some good line changes and get fresh people on the ice and make them extend their shifts as much as possible.
They're the
two key points, yep.
Yeah, Colorado is the second best high danger chance team in the NHL. They create a ton. second best rush chance team, first best cycle chance team.
Leafs are just going to have the puck a lot more.
Yeah.
And you got to keep it out of his hands and Makar's as much as he can here. And that's really on now. For me, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, they have to have the puck. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes Mitch gets lost because he doesn't get the puck enough. Mm-hmm. And I thought against Calgary, Matthews had jump for me. He had a forcefulness to him that, you know, there's a fine line between waiting for the puck and then saying, damn it, I'm going to go get it myself now. I'll mm-hmm. just go get it. Mm-hmm. And Matthews, as we know, has been one of the best over his career at taking pucks away.
Yeah.
Haven't seen a lot of that this year, mm-hmm. but that's the philosophy you have to have against this team. Just have the puck more than they do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was how the Leafs wanted to defend in previous years. It was like, all right, we're just going to try to have the puck more. And it can be challenging when the other team also has really good players. So, yeah, we'll see if this North-South thing, how it holds up against Colorado again. I do feel like the Leafs are finding their game a little bit, and I know that they'd lost some games recently, a lot of games, but I found that they were playing good teams. It was post-trade deadline, things were kind of coming together, looked great against Calgary. I think they'll give Colorado a good game tonight, and the Avs obviously buzzing as much as anyone.
Makar on pace for 30 this year. He has 25 goals.
He's a joke.
There's been 17 30 goal seasons by NHLers in the history of the league.
D-man.
Do I want to test you guys?
So is it like Ray Bourque counts for five or something?
Yeah, Ray Bourque's had a few of them, yeah.
How did you phrase that again?
There's 30 goal seasons.
There's been 17.
17, goals. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. 17 in total.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Orr got some?
Yeah, yep. Coff.
Yep. Coffey has the record. 48 goals.
Wow.
48 goals he had in...
Lidstrom ever have 30?
Leach ever?
Nope.
No, I don't think Brian Leach ever had 30.
There's one really sneaky one, Kevin, that you would have played with, Kipper.
Yeah. Is there a Niedermeyer in there?
For the 30. Caps.
Not Hatcher.
Kevin Hatcher.
Kevin Hatcher had 32.
30 goals?
He scored 34 goals, boys, in 92-93.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Bobby Orr,
Dennis Pavin?
Yes, sir. Three times. 30, 31, 31. So there you go. Who else? Mike Green, Phil Housley had one. Doug Wilson had one. There you go.
Randy Carlyle, did he ever come close?
Randy Carlyle.
He had a couple of big years. He won a Norris, didn't he?
I don't know. Anyways, so Cale Makar is on pace to join that group. It's not a. That's
elite company.
It's really amazing. It's actually pretty amazing that he hasn't done it already. Yeah. If you think about how many times he shoots it in the net, but. I think if I'm power ranking my favorite guys to watch in the league, outside of McDavid, who I don't know if you saw the goal he scored last night.
Oh, my God.
One's ever gone faster.
I said to you guys, like, do you think you could defend him with a pistol?
No.
Like, if you're playing D and they give you a gun, could you stop Connor McDavid?
He's cooking me.
Just Aaron shot into the rafters.
But I think Makar is in my top five favorite guys to watch in the league. Love watching him play.
I agree with that.
So, and he was so good for Canada. So, you know, has a secondary assist on the McDavid goal.
It's just those guys are so rare. Mm-hmm. And then we're watching Quinn Hughes again last night. I'm watching him, and I'm like, this guy's just—he's on another planet.
It just feels
so good last night.
It feels so different. Like the whole game is like circles around him, but it's not with speed. He just he seems to have it all the time.
His pace.
Yeah. Like, but it's a different pace. It's a lateral pace. It's a patient pace.
And I know Morgan Riley can't be that, but he's going to have to find a way to still stand out amongst this blue line core for the Maple Leafs. He still needs, for the Leafs to have great success, he's going to have to find to be the best version that he can to do that for the Leafs.
I wonder if getting comfortable with Brandon Carlo can free him up. They say him just be like, I trust my guy and I'm going to be a go-for-it.
It's just so unreal. Kipper, it's just so unrealistic. Like
to talk Quinn Hughes and then be like, can Morgan Riley?
He just can't.
Yeah.
We've seen it. We know what it looks like when it's at its best, and it hasn't been at its best in a long time. And it might be on the other side of
that first round against Tampa Bay.
And it might,
he was pretty good for a five-game stretch prior to the four.
When they went out west.
Just before they shut down.
Yeah. He was up the rink a lot, creating. Yes. That's what he has to do. He has to make a conscious effort to skate up the rink.
Tonight.
Against Colorado.
Right? Just have somewhat of a look of pace of play for the best version.
Get involved. Be an option on the offensive side of things. Get up there. I think that would be great.
Did you want to play a clip from the last time they played? Leafs and Avalanche? Because it wasn't that long ago, and he talked about it a little bit today. Clip two, please, Derek.
Well, I look back to second period, you know, and that's a good second period team, Colorado, as we are too. But I thought they three-quarter iced us in that period and put us on our heels for the period, you know. And that's draining. That takes a lot of energy out of you for the third. And I didn't feel we had enough juice in the third. You know, I know we had the lead, but we lost it. And, you know, we got to do a better job of that tonight. And they do it. They're good at it. And we got to make sure that we're doing a better job of that.
For those looking for an explainer on what three-quarter ice
it was, that's why I cut it.
Yeah. It's like they have so much pressure that you're punting. So you're punting it out into the neutral zone. They're regrouping. You're diving into your bench for a change, and they're coming back.
You get to play on. They're playing on three-quarters of the ice.
Yeah,
you're playing on a
quarter. Can't get it back to the other side.
Makes sense. Never heard that before.
And no, I haven't either.
If you truly go back and now break down games, go watch how many unforced errors lead to a three-quarter ice.
Yeah. And
I can't
it messes up changes.
Tell you
really
how
bad.
Many times you watch the Leafs in control, maybe a D to D, then their head's up. They
then
stop
Juan
the feet
Myers
moving.
Pull the pin on
then,
the thing.
Then they go to their 30-foot launch, and it's like, oh, right back in our zone.
And it's the end of those guys' shift who are breaking it out. Meanwhile, the other team's coming on the rink. They're dumping it in. Your guys are now tired. Yeah. You're under pressure on a breakout.
You mentioned quickly, there's a couple things I want to get before we get to mm-hmm. Doctor, but you mentioned the Benoit thing, mm-hmm. and it's forcing all of Rekman Larson to play on his offside. And I would say that Benoit recently, outside of the Superman punch and him just jumping and beating the crap out of Dryden Hunt, he's been in Leaf fans' crosshairs in terms of a bit of a whipping boy right now. Yes. Is Myers coming in on the right side so that Oliver Ekman-Larsson can flip over to the other side? Is that enough of a benefit to try to change it?
It is. It's a great question, and I think an important one for the Leafs is Benoit better enough than Myers that you want to make OEL worse?
Yes.
And I don't know that you're not better off with the best of OEL and Myers. To me, Myers and Benoit, I like Benoit more.
Yeah, me too.
But Myers is long-rangey, defense-first kind of guy. Also, I kind of secretly like that he wants to pound the pill every time it comes.
Myers?
It. Yeah.
Oh, he loves the hammer.
If it's anywhere near him, he shoots it. I kind of like that. So, to me, it's, you know, they're kind of close, and I think OEL should play on the strong side. You, Kip?
Benoit's actually stood out for me the last little while.
He's been better,
but he's only better when, like, other guys are worse, too. I didn't think McCabe's had a good week.
Mm-hmm.
Better. Everybody's was better in Calgary. I get that.
Yeah.
But I think prior to that, he's
a little shaky. Agree.
And I think if those guys can step up, then there could be more better pickings, to your point, on where you want to put certain people here. But I think collectively this blue line has to have a really good solid look tonight.
Yeah. And I do know that Myers fought the San Jose guys at Ferraro. Is that who he fought?
Yeah. After he hammered somebody.
Yeah. Which is good. But Benoit kind of wants to do that. He kind of wants. That's part of his game. Is
you get the feeling he's pretty popular teammate. Too,
yeah.
You know? I think that probably matters as well. I don't know anything about Meyer, but just every time you see him talk, it seems to joke about him. I don't know. He seems like a funny guy.
Yeah.
I'm projecting my own feelings about how I would love to hang out with him onto the team, but it just seems like he's that kind of guy to me.
Gotcha.
Anyways.
Our very own Jason Buchalas wrote an article on sportsnet.ca on Matthew Nyes and where he projects him to be, and talked about perhaps his next contract. Do you guys want to get into that after we finish with the doctor?
After the doc, we'll have time.
Yeah.
And also, we'll talk about why Josh Levo should come back to be a Maple Leaf.
Oh, my God.
I know. He has two goals from the KHL scoring record, KHL goals record.
47 and 60 or something?
48 and 60 games is the record. He has 47 and two games to go. And he's only 31 years old. And
he's going to be the star of the Trump-Putin Cup.
whose record is he breaking? Is he following him around?
Sergei Moisakin is whose record.
Yes, of course.
You guys, he's Moisey. He is a established scoring leader in the K.
Sergei. Okay. It's my first time. Ever.
Let's take a quick break.
The Moisinator.
When we return.
Moisey.
Your favorite medical segment in now podcast history. Dr. Jason Smith. We'll get into Gabriel Landeskog and the odds. Okay. You want to do a Bet365 odd? How much of a chance do you give Gabriel Landeskog to resume his career?
I don't know.
Save it.
Oh, okay.
Save it for the break.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Jason Smith, Doctor, up next.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. The doctor will see you now. Let's welcome in Dr. Jason Smith, orthopedic surgeon to the stars. How's it going, buddy?
Going great, man. Beautiful day.
I know.
Good to be here.
I know. There's a fairly big story when it comes to a certain player and heart and soul guy. Everybody knows Gabriel Landeskog has not played since they've won the Stanley Cup. You know, Doc, when we think of knee injuries, we think of anterior cruciate ligament, meniscus, MCL, but I have no idea what cartilage transplant surgery would mean, not only to a hockey player, but to anybody here. And that's all we really know, but what can you tell us about this type of surgery, this injury?
Yeah, so and this is a big one, right? So let's go back a second, right? So in 2021, this guy signs, you know, this 8-year, $56 million contract, you know, $7 million a year. He's, you know, the face of the team, going to be the captain, like unbelievable. And then in 2022, he's putting up good numbers. He's having a good season. But then in March, I mean, March, so close to the playoffs, this guy has, you know, the knee cleanup surgery, has surgery on his knee, makes it back for the playoffs and wins a Stanley Cup. Like, unbelievable. Like, this guy, you know, is on top of the world. But, you know, doesn't make the start of the next season. And then in October, has another knee surgery, misses the entire next season. Mm-hmm. And then he's going, like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, he tried to get back. He's had the simple surgeries, you know, these knee scopes, these cleanouts, like whatever you're doing for cartilage or whatever you're doing for his knee. And so then in May 2023, he undergoes a cartilage transplant. It's like, so let's be honest. This is a Hail Mary, you know, the simple things, the injections, the cleanups, these things that we hear about all the time, the guys get back from, this hasn't worked. So they're like, well, you're at the start of an 8-year contract. Like, you can't just pack it in here. Like, what are we going to do? So now you start throwing Hail Marys. So what he had done, and I don't have any very specific knowledge from this. You know, I'm not his doc. I didn't talk to the surgeon. I don't know. But what I think he had was, so a piece of cadaver bone with the cartilage on it was put into his knee to replace the area of the injured cartilage. Jeez. So that's the procedure that is done in, you know, sports, in life, when you have these big cartilage defects that the simple stuff just doesn't help. But, you know, that's May 2023. And now, like, we're almost 3 years since this guy has played.
Right.
So we want to get into the issues. Like, let's talk about this. So as far as I know, that's what's been done. And, you know, that's a bit of a Hail Mary at the best of times, let alone for a professional hockey player.
So is there risk then with him coming back? Now, I'm going to say maybe the most ignorant thing, but like cadaver bone is fine. It does it hold up as well as had it been his own bone? What is he going to be dealing with as he gets back here?
That's the thing, right? Like these things are at this point, they're like coin flips.
Mm-hmm.
Like you hope because the bone has to heal and then the cartilage over top of it has to be robust. And he's got to somehow get his body, his quad, his core, his everything back. And then he's got to figure out how to play hockey after 3 years. Like, I missed two Saturday skates. I'm useless, you know? Like, let alone 3 years and trying to get back to professional hockey. So, I mean, I am cheering for this guy. My God. Because if this guy gets back, that's amazing.
Right.
So, Doc, we've seen videos of Landeskog going up and down the ice, and he looks okay. He looks like everybody else. But can you replicate anything remotely close to a game when you're in a corner and you got a guy 240 pounds and he's pushing off of you and now the torque is all on that knee?
Yeah, until you see that, you don't know. Yeah, he can rip up and down the ice all day long. But, you know, the guy plays a hard game. Power forward, he's in the corners, he's driving the net, he's not just coasting around the center of the ice. Like, this guy's going to have to play his game where he's going to have that 240-pound defenseman and push off of him. He's going to have to drive him to the net. And you don't know how these things hold up. Like, in general, we put these things in. So, yeah, you can go walk to the golf course and you can go do your yoga on Saturday. Like, that's where we're putting these in a lot. And we're relatively confident that they can hold up. But asking this to hold up in a professional hockey player at 32 years old, like, again, I am cheering for this guy and I hope he makes it back because, I mean, he's got a mountain to climb.
Yeah, I imagine he can't like go to like Farm Boy and select the finest cartilage from the former Olympian or something. It's just kind of you get what you get and you don't get upset. So
you
like
know, that's it. Yeah, you're right. So the number of variables there, the number of things that have to go right to get in the right cartilage, it's the right shape and size for you, the bone integrates perfectly. Like all these things that have to go right for this to happen is there's a ton of them.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So just one more for me, and that is if by chance this thing does work for him, does this change the way you guys look at this or this surgery, or do you look at it and go, like you just mentioned, all the stars aligned in this scenario, but that certainly doesn't mean the next guy it'll be the same?
Yeah, like I wouldn't be suddenly telling GMs to sign every guy that's having this procedure. You know, if this guy makes it back, you know, all the planets aligned and worked out. It's hopeful for other people, and these one-off stories, you know, are always super motivating and gives guys hope. But I'm not banking on this one yet, no.
Well, like you said, Doc, we wish him the best of luck because he is one of the good guys there, and he was fun to watch, and he's just was in the heart of his career, and we'd love to see it all come back one more time for him. Doc, thanks for doing this, pal. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Okay.
Thanks,
hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
We didn't open up the show with.
I know.
Doctor.
Doctor. Doctor.
Doctor.
Doctor.
And doctor.
Doctor.
All right.
Okay. Now you're good to go. Go back to doing surgery or whatever you want to do. All right. Jason All right. Smith, orthopedic
Great
surgeon.
Stuff. Wow.
So
that's insane.
Oh yeah, no, it's crazy what they can do. And
I blew up my ACL.
Yeah.
In 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And
back then they used electrical tape to fix it.
Elmer's glue.
Yeah.
I had a cowboy for a doc, just like wild west. Don't worry about it, kid. I'll look after you.
Yeah.
And that was the extent of what I knew what was going to happen to my knee.
Yeah, I'll look after you.
I'll look after you.
Oh, right. My God.
Is
it still hurt?
I get
today?
To the Philadelphia hospital. I'm on the gurney or whatever you call that thing. And right before they put me under, he just holds up what looks like a chicken breast and says, "Hey, kid, look at your new knee." And it was a cadaver, an Achilles tendon.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up and really have no idea what just happened. And it was a fairly new procedure at the time where they take a cadaver and build your new knee.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point...
Abracadaver.
At no point was there ever a discussion with me or my parents who ended up coming down.
Yeah.
It was just like...
You need a knee. I got the knee.
Yeah, I got the knee for you.
Yeah, what are you going to do about it?
And apparently as I got... As I went years later, even after retirement, I kind of researched it and there was quite a percentage of rejections.
Oh, yeah.
To foreign objects.
Just having your knee rejected.
In your knee.
Another knee, yeah.
And, like, to Doc's point, the stars aligned for me because I never had dealt with any swelling. Yeah. It's never given me any pain.
Yeah. Wow.
I ran the New York Marathon 10 years ago on the knee.
What a cowboy you had.
And you ran the New York Marathon 10 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, 47.
Wow.
And, like, I don't know, maybe I was just lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But... And to this day, my surgical knee is tighter and stronger than my good knee.
Yeah. You know, that's great. That's cool that yours worked out. This Landeskog thing here, I think it's good to have just had the doc on for people to get perspective that this is not a guy who, it's just, okay, the normal thing has recovered and it's ready to go and you're going to go back. It's like, should he do this or should he not? He's young. He wants to do it. It'll torture him for the rest of his life if he doesn't try to get back.
Exactly.
And so he's taking a chance because he wants this and he wants to see if he can do it. There is real risk involved. And it's a tremendous story. And I think he's got a documentary out. I think I mentioned before if it's not out, it's coming
sort
out.
Sort of following him, training for this and coming back.
Trying to get back. Yeah. There was one for a tennis player, maybe Murray. Either way, coming back, similar thing, who made it back to tennis. So yeah, he's ready to go. And obviously he's a foremost worker. Everyone says he's still a tank and he's puts in the hours. So,
and even if you do this, you make this effort and you get back and like, you're able to play 8 minutes in two games or whatever, and they go on and they win a cup. You're part of it. You're the captain, like a lot like Stamkos.
And then you know, though, then you know,
then
if you
know.
You could, you tried.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that maybe is the best point, JB, is that you now have at least full closure. It's not going to be like 15 or 20 years from now if I would have stuck with it or if I just would have tried harder or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like this will be definitive one way or another. He'll know for sure whether or not this ever had a chance or not. And that may help
Nick
moving
Cousins
forward.
Goes low and submarines his knee in the final.
Nick Cousins in the final? Senzer in the final?
Hey,
what the hell is happening here?
I forgot he wasn't on Florida.
In the meantime.
Nice.
Matthew Nyes. Okay. Jason Bukala wrote a story on sportsnet.ca kind of outlining maybe a couple of options that the Leafs might take or look at in regards to signing him to a new contract.
Yeah. So he kind of laid out, you know, that Nyes is a rare player to have in your roster. I think it's funny, you know, that he mentions and other people have mentioned, like, other GMs had interest in Nyes at the deadline. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
22-6-3, and he's going to score 30 goals. No kidding.
Yeah.
So the point is, you know, for him is, what do you do with Nyes in terms of his contract? He has laid out a couple potential ones, a 5-year extension and an 8-year extension. The 5-year, he's got it at about $7.5 million. The 8-year at 8 to 8.5. You know, his suggestion is that you sign him first, which kind of sets the framework for the rest of the roster decisions. You know, kind of figure it out from there. It's a big one for the Leafs that they get this guy under contract, and you know, you can make a case that it's
a priority. I love Jason Bukala on the show, but I do not agree with him.
I bet you think it's the Marner contract.
No, it's not anybody's contract, but it does come into play.
Yeah.
But like, what's the hurry on Matthew Nyes? He is restricted. He's locked in. The only thing you got to worry about, I guess, or have people mention is that he could be offer cheated.
That's real. That's very real as a concern. Teams see the Leafs.
Let's just talk about this for a second.
Sure.
Okay. What is he going to get offered that the Toronto Maple Leafs will walk away from?
It won't happen.
It won't happen.
But someone else would get to dictate a number you don't want to give him. Now he's making 10.
What is that number? Who in their right mind would sign Matthew Nyes to $10 million?
See, this is the thing that teams who want to properly use offer sheets need to do. They should offer him 15 on a 1 or 2 year deal.
Matthew Nyes, on a one, 15 on, million.
I'm telling you, it's not because he's worth 15. Because no one's going to pay him 15. So you find a team who's up against the cap. You do a 1 year monster deal, which then you have him in your organization. You have the chance to resign. And they will give you a more normal contract after that.
You got to pay him $15 million every year.
What do you mean? No, you don't.
Then what are you paying him?
You could renegotiate after that and say, all right, here's your next deal because we hooked you up on that one.
But I'll arb you and keep my $15 million. Why do I have to go back?
Well, because you go ahead and arb me. You're not worth 15. We'll put you up against every player in the league.
And then you won't match the arb. You'll walk away from it, and he'll walk.
But this is the thing that this is how it's you like, utilize offer sheets is that you throw a big number to get him in your org.
No one's going to throw $10 or $15 million at this guy. I like him. He's a good player. Yeah. But do you even know what he is ultimately?
No. And that's but I'm saying in terms of offer sheets, you don't want to put yourself at the mercy of other teams.
The last offer sheet that I guess we can remember is Kotkaniemi, maybe.
Hollowin Broberg just got poached.
That's a different beast.
Why?
Because it was like they didn't know what they had, and it was like $2 million.
Well, it happened.
And five, which is still reasonable.
They gave them contracts the Oilers weren't willing to match.
But they were dumb. Oilers were dumb.
Dumb.
They should have matched
Super
it.
Dumb.
And then it would have been over.
Yes.
So that's just a bad mistake on the Oilers' part. The Leafs wouldn't make that
but
bad mistake.
But the point is, Kip, if you're going to match whatever anyone offers anyway, just give him a contract that you like.
Or give him one that he doesn't like. He's not going anywhere. Give him $4 million at 3 years. Give him, or tell him to stay home. Can I tell you something? Every time the Leafs have given 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds $10 million, it's come back to bite him in the ass.
Yes, it has.
Okay? Stop it.
Listen, I hate that's true. But I'm all in. Listen, I'm all in on
enough.
A short deal. Give him a
enough.
Short deal.
Hey, Matthews.
Just pick the number yourself.
You're restricted. There's good money waiting for you, but this is what we're offering you. Take it or stay home.
Yeah. That's fine. If you decide he's the guy you're going to dig in on, but you don't have to hose him.
No, you're not hosing him.
Contract's going up $1 zillion. You're losing
you're
two guys
hosing.
Making $22 million. Hey, say here's five times seven. Let's go.
Here's four times two or four times three or four and a half times three. Go out there and put together 75 points. You're with Austin Matthews, and I will give you the world, my friend.
I don't know how many years till he would be
how
UFA.
How many points is he going to end up with?
I don't know, 40. No idea.
Oh, 40's, okay, tell me 40 and I'm like going to punch you in the head.
Is it 50?
Because you want to give him $10 million.
I don't want to give him 55. $10 million. I'm saying that's 40, how you get him on an offer sheet.
Boop wants to give him 8.5.
Well, if you give him 8 times that, it might look pretty decent. That's
he's
what
got
guys
44
like.
Points so far this year in 63
so he's
games.
He's going to end up with 60.
Yeah. Generously.
Call generously? 53.
Minus 3.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to end up with 55.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it was Austin and Marner all this year. Shouldn't it be 75 for $8.5 million?
I think you can totally do a short-term deal.
Yes.
And I personally
bridge,
think...
Bridge.
Yeah, okay. Enjoy the one that comes after that one, but...
Bridge.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Cap's going to $115 million. Bridge.
Bridge.
All right. Bridge. Didn't know bridge. We were going to get into that.
I love when you guys...
All right. We're going to take a deep breath on Matthew Nyes. When we go national, Jason York up next. Sens, Montreal Canadiens. Who's going to get that last spot in the East? Plenty more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.